Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. And now, here are your hosts, Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein.
Good afternoon, everyone. Back at Lambeau Field in downtown Milwaukee. That's where I am. I'm Jim Ozarski, along with your co-host, Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PackersNews.com. For the Green 19 podcast, week two, Tom, we made it through week one, and now the Packers are going to open up in a empty Lambeau Field this Sunday against the Detroit Lions, a team that they trailed for, 120 minutes last year and somehow went 2-0. It's starting off on an interesting level for the Packers, Tom. We'll just kind of get into the news of the week, which is defensive tackle Kenny Clark, groin injury, went on local radio, kind of said it wasn't as bad as maybe it could be, but obviously he's not so sure when he can play. So we'll just start there, Tom. What's your sense? You know, a groin injury is not any small thing, especially for a big guy where it's all legs and leverage.
Yeah, well, he sort of expressed that there hadn't been a diagnosis, which to me means that they're probably trying to determine, you know, a muscle strain is a tear. So how big is the tear? Is it just something that needs to heal over time? Or is it one of these core muscle injuries that needs surgery? I mean, we've seen that with, I remember Demaryius Randall had that. Quentin Rollins had it. I'm forgetting. Geronimo Allison, I think, had it. And it, you know, you can be back within 4 weeks from it. I'm not saying that he needs it, but I think he was sort of indicating that Thursday would be the day he would know more. So I doubt we'll see him on the field, and I doubt he'll play against Detroit. I think they got to make sure he's healthy, and I wouldn't be surprised even if they held him out through the bye week just to make sure that this thing doesn't linger, because those are bad injuries.
Is this one of those things, Tom, where the three-week IR could just take a lot of this stress off the plate of the player and even the coaching staff to a degree, where you just put him on IR? That's, I'm trying to do my math here towards the bye week. I mean, then that ends all speculation or worry, especially something like this where it's, I don't know, it just feels like the guys are going to be out for a week or two anyway.
Yeah, and if it allows you to then bring somebody in, add to the roster, you know, whether it's the practice squad or the 53-man roster, then, you know, instead of having this one roster spot where the guy's not practicing, you have another player who actually is practicing, and you either get to take a look at a guy or, you know, try to get a Willington Prevlion ready to play or whatever, whoever it is. I think that does make it much easier to put someone on IR and take a lot of pressure off them.
Yeah. Why not use all of the rules at your disposal, right? And the team did sign veteran Billy Wynn, 31 years old, to the practice squad, but it's an interesting case, Tom. That guy, he hasn't played a regular season snap in 3 years due to injuries.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see what happens there. Another.
That's a tryout, basically.
Yeah.
That seemed like it was with Dalen Mack. You know, they're just bringing a guy in to see where he's at.
And now flip to the offensive line. You know, Lane Taylor out for the year with a torn knee suffered in Minnesota. Billy Turner returned to practice. Lucas Patrick returned to practice after missing the rest of the game with a shoulder. So what's interesting, Tom, is when Rick Wagner signed in March and Lane Taylor still had a huge cap number. I mean, we thought, a lot of people thought, do you cut or trade Lane Taylor and your starting offensive line is Billy Turner at right guard and Rick Wagner at right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it possible that that's the offensive line we see going forward? I know Turner beat out Wagner at right tackle, and then Wagner dropped a third on the depth chart behind Elton Jenkins. But, I mean, is that a combination we might see Sunday if Turner is indeed good to go and they thought Wagner held up okay?
Well, wouldn't that be interesting that all the effort they did in putting Billy Turner in getting Billy Turner ready to play right tackle – is for nothing, and he winds up playing right guard the whole year. I guess that's something we're going to have to see. I thought Wagner played really well, and he did see some time against Enguike. So I don't know, you know, can he hold up against Trey Flowers? Maybe. He's a veteran, and you know that he's not going to be shaken by anything. I think what really knocked Billy Turner over to right tackle was the play of Lane Taylor. Lane Taylor forced himself into the starting lineup, and now he's gone. And, you know, now they got to figure out what's the best five, as Matt LaFleur would say, sticking Lucas Patrick in there at right guard or going with Turner and Wagner.
Yeah, that will be interesting. You don't typically see rotating linemen week to week. I think New England tried that some years ago, Tom. I mean, it's not a typical thing. I mean, I that doesn't mean it's not right or couldn't work for this squad.
I can't see them doing that. They got to pick, you know, Billy Turner after playing right tackle. If he's going to play guard, they got to just keep him there and let him get back to knowing it. But I would, if I had to guess, I would say that they keep Turner at right tackle, or they even deem him not ready to play this week. I don't know. We don't know for sure that he's ready to play.
All right. Interesting things to watch here as we get to Sunday. And of course, you know, follow us on all your social channels and subscribe over at PackersNews.com, and you'll be up to date as soon as all of those determinations are made. So, you know, this Lions game is interesting, Tom, as I said at the top. You know, Matt LaFleur flat out called it miraculous that they went 2-0 against this team last year when they led for literally 0 seconds.
Yeah.
It's one of the all-time great statistical anomalies, you know, to come away with two victories. And yet there's a part of me, Tom, that's just like, I don't see – it didn't make sense to me that the Lions were that competitive in these two games last year. There's nothing about the way they played against the Bears or the way the Packers played against the Vikings that makes me think they should be in the game Friday, but yet, or Sunday. But look, they beat the Packers twice 2 years ago under Matt Patricia. For whatever reason, it's a good coaching matchup, or even with all the issues – Detroit has in man coverage and they continue to do it. It seems to work. I don't know. What is your sense, you know, heading in, just overall heading into this game Sunday?
Well, you know, they should have beaten Chicago. Their one rookie drop in the end zone of having beaten Chicago. So they were right there in position. And even though they let Mitch Trubisky throw three TDs against them, they should have won. But I think what we're going to see is the same situation as we saw the Packers against Minnesota, which is their secondary is shaky. It's likely that first-round pick Jeff Okuda will have to start. And as good as he is, and I think he's going to be really good, it's Davante Adams puts tremendous pressure on rookies. And so I think their secondary is a problem, and that's going to be exploited by Matt LaFleur. And, you know, until the Packers really play a good secondary, we won't know the full extent of their pass offense. But I think this will be an example where they can continue. Unless the offensive line just gets dominated, I think they'll have another good passing day.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's, I mean, this offense is set up to get those guys running free. You know, I mean, even Davante Adams was running some crossing routes wide open or some outs wide open. And granted, he can do that on his own. But, you know, you're right. I think with some of these motions and the multiple tight end sets, it just allows for that. And, of course, you know, it was Detroit a year ago where Alan Lazard sort of made his name, if you will, for this Packers offense. So, you know, they've taken advantage of some of that stuff. So would you be surprised, Tom, if Patricia remains sort of stubborn? I mean, I guess he's been stubborn for 3 years with this man coverage. I mean, they played some zone early against the Bears. It fooled Trubisky because we know that that guy can't really handle zone coverages. And then in crunch time, they went to man and they gave up 3 touchdowns. I mean, is there any chance that Patricia throws any kind of different stuff at this Packers offense? He just said on Thursday, you can't really confuse or pressure Rodgers. So does he just do what he does or believes in and hope some pass rush can happen?
Well, he's of course comes from the Belichick school of we'll do this week what it takes to win. And what we did last week doesn't mean that's what we're going to do this week. So he'll do whatever I think can account for, one, the fact that he probably won't have Desmond Trufant at cornerback, and two, that the matchups man-to-man are terrible against the Packers, especially Davante Adams. You know, if you're going to play man-to-man, then you better double him pretty regularly. So we'll see. I think he's going to play around with his fronts and try to confuse the offensive line. I think that's where he'll probably make the most adjustments and really try to shut down Aaron Jones. I think that's, if he feels like he can take the head off of Aaron Jones, then that's going to help him quite a bit. So that would be my guess is how they approach it. Whether it's zone or man, I don't know. But he'll come up with something.
And that's sort of interesting, Tom, that, you know, the Vikings, at least to me, looked like they wanted to stop the Packers' run game first. And that obviously allowed some play action to work, some deeper shots to work. Kind of interesting, do you think, that that's – If you're going to have to pick a poison, at least maybe in week one, Mike Zimmer, and perhaps here in week two, Matt Patricia decides the poison they'd rather not die by is Aaron Jones in the run game and let Aaron Rodgers lift it a little bit. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. But everybody knows that they don't have an elite core of wide receivers. They have one elite receiver, and then they have some guys who – when they're in single coverage or they're in motion or, you know, doing drag routes and things like that, they can make catches. But I don't blame anybody for viewing Aaron Jones as the biggest threat, because he is. He sort of makes everything go for the Packers. And Aaron Rodgers looked great, but he had zero pressure on him all game long. And part of that was they had to respect Aaron Jones. So
what did you make of, you know, Matt LaFleur saying A.J. Dillon earned or perhaps deserved some more snaps? I mean, he only had 3, and they ran a ton of plays. But this goes back to the conversation a couple years ago about the free Aaron Jones social media meme, right? Like, I mean, if you're going to give one guy more snaps, that means other guys get fewer. So how did you interpret that? And maybe how does that change even here as early as week two, maybe what some of Matt LaFleur and Nathaniel Hackett are thinking offensively?
Well, I honestly think they would have played A.J. Dillon a lot more if their defense hadn't given up 24 points in the fourth quarter. You know, they could have run all day long with Dillon. I could have seen him running, you know, eight times in a row with him. But the Vikings kept scoring and making it close, and they had to keep bringing Aaron Jones back onto the field. So I think in a perfect world, A.J. Dillon gets more snaps. And in games where they know they're going to run it, he's going to get more snaps. I think it's just, you know, you got to give him a little time. There's no sense in rushing him into everything. Jamal Williams played a pretty solid game. And it's just that Dillon has a chance to be kind of special, and or they think he can be special. So you've got to be cognizant of getting him in the game. You can't forget about him.
Yeah, it'll be – so just as a refresher for folks, Aaron Rodgers, you know, the last time they played at Lambeau, sacked once. He was intercepted once against the Lions. And, you know, Jamal Williams was the one. He ran for 100 yards in that game, 4 for 32 with a score. So that was the Jamal Williams game last year before Mason Crosby walked it off. I guess, Tom – what I'm curious with Detroit is, you know, Patricia in this defense has been, I don't know. I mean, like, they're competitive, but they don't seem to win. The last week was their 11th time in his career coaching the Lions. They blew a fourth quarter lead. Now, when you blow a lead, that means offense maybe doesn't score. Your defense is also giving up points. I don't know. What do you make of that? I mean, he seemed to shrug it off and say, it's not my fault. You know, hey, look, Malcolm Butler intercepted Russell Wilson. That was pretty good. I don't know what relevance that has as a head coach of the Lions. What do you make of that, I guess? And the reason I bring it up is because, again, if this is another competitive game, if the Lions do some stuff offensively, I mean, it feels like this Detroit team still doesn't know how to win yet. And inherently, how does that has to tilt the favor – or tilt the field in favor of Aaron Rodgers if push comes to shove in the final moments, just like, you know, the Packers saw twice last year.
Yeah. There's a lot of factors that go into that. In his time in Detroit, you know, Matthew Stafford has been hurt quite a bit. That's certainly a factor. The talent level, they've never, you know, they haven't really had a running game until – what, week 17 last year, when they just, you know, grinded, what was it, 170 yards or something like that against the Packers with a bunch of guys that few of us had heard of. I don't know. Detroit is until you turn the culture around of losing, and Detroit has a long history of losing, it's hard. It's hard to win. And you know, the Packers have, for a little while there, I thought Detroit had turned the corner, at least in terms of the Packers. You know, I think they had won three straight, right?
Yeah, they did.
And I really thought they had turned a corner, but we'll know a little bit more Sunday. I just don't think Detroit is quite there yet. They got to keep building that defense. I think there's still some holes there.
And what do you, and I know it's just 1 year, Tom, but I mean, you know, it's 1 year in a game, I guess. I mean, Matt LaFleur, right? Undefeated in the division. I mean, does that say anything, or is that just the benefit of the best team? I mean, you saw some pretty good Packers teams that continually, one, I mean, what's Aaron Rodgers now, 49-17-2, something ridiculous in the North? I mean, I look, we don't know what's going to happen with COVID. If there's a potential outbreak, but if they win Sunday, that's 2-0 in the division again to start a year with a road win in Minnesota. I don't know. It feels like the Packers, a victory Sunday sets up a lot of things, and Matt LaFleur and Rodgers continue to kind of put their stamp on this division.
Oh yeah, it puts them in command. It was similar last year. You know, they pulled out an upset in Chicago, and then they were able to carry that, you know, as the season went forward and not lose again in the division. So, yeah, this is a big game in that regard. Getting up 2-0, while, you know, two of the teams have one loss, and I can't remember who Chicago plays this weekend. If they can get to 2-0 and each team has a loss, that's pretty big.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the Detroit run game, and to me, Tom, I think this is where Sunday can be competitive. You know, we went back and forth on our post-game podcast about the Packers run D against the Vikings. You know, I think 100 yards from the running backs, they still averaged over 5 yards a carry. Fairly irrelevant late due to the score. Mm-hmm. Matthew Stafford aside, I mean, Adrian Peterson, the ageless wonder, ran for almost 100 yards against the Bears. You know, DeAndre Swift didn't carry it much, dropped a game-winning touchdown. I mean, he ran a route and got open. So that it feels like that has to be the game plan for Detroit if they feel like they can come in and win, is to just hand the ball off, especially with not that. Look, Kenny Clark was there for the first half when Minnesota did run the ball with success. So that feels like it's old school Adrian Peterson against the Packers, right?
I mean, it's the run defense is not solved. I don't, even though the numbers, you know, when I was just at the stadium and looking at stats, I was like, you know, this isn't too bad. But then when I went back and kind of watched the game, I just saw some of the same stuff that we had seen a year ago. And so they have not solved all their issues on the ground. And this is going to be a opportunity for Detroit to pound the ball. So I totally expect them to work Adrian Peterson. He's had some huge games against the Packers, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him do it again.
Yeah, Matthew Stafford is still a good quarterback. You know, he's still got guys to throw to, but you're right, Tom. I feel like it seems too obvious. And sometimes, and you know this, NFL coaches get wrapped up in the thing they want to do as mm-hmm. opposed to the things they should do. So maybe we'll see. We'll see. And you know, I just feel like the Packers secondary can – almost forces teams to run the ball. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like whether Kenny Golladay is good to go with his hamstring, I know Marvin Jones is pretty good still as well. And there are weapons out there, and I don't know. I just think the Packers secondary almost can make teams run the ball first, and why not? Right. Like it just feels like Detroit should just pound it and see what happens. Cause I feel Matthew Stafford still will give teams opportunities, and you're
seeing. Yeah. I don't want to, you know, though Marvin Jones was supposed to be, you know, covered by Alexander and not supposed to do much last year after he shouldn't have done that much after Golladay went out. But right. You know, he's torched the Packers, and Golladay had a monster day last year in Detroit. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him try to stay balanced. But you know, the first thing I would do if I were them would be to try to run the ball against the Packers. That should always be your number one objective. Make them stop the run.
Yeah, and they basically swapped Golden Tate at one point. That Danny Amendola is now kind of their slot guy, and he, you know, established himself early. 5 catches, 81 yards. They did have success throwing the ball against the Bears, without a doubt. I definitely not diminishing that element of the Detroit offense, Tom, for sure. Quintez Cephus, the former Badger, 3 catches for 43 yards last week. I know some people thought, you know, he might be an option for the Packers last draft. Go figure. Adrian Peterson caught 3 balls last week, Tom.
Yeah.
Not really his forte, but if you can keep guys honest.
Get him the ball, you know, any way you can. I guess he's, even at age 47, he's still capable of running over people.
So I'll bring this up. You know, Mason Crosby was, you know, perfect field goals, extra points, no issues on punts. You know, he said empty stadium shouldn't matter. He was curious about kicking in Lambeau during the scrimmages, Tom. He thought maybe some of the wind in the bowl might be different just because there's no bodies to stop it. Kind of curious. I mean, he's a golfer. That's kind of the things golfers think about too. Wind below the tree lines, above the tree lines, all that stuff. The reason I bring this up is because it felt like kickers had some issues in week one in various outdoor stadiums. I don't know what the wind's going to be like. Do you think that matters at all? Or just because he's even thought about it, does mean it matters. Where do you fall on actually getting outdoors with no one in the stands?
I think it'll be a little bit different. I think it's always easier to kick inside, and I don't know how the wind is going to change in Lambeau Field with no fans. I assume it is, and that's why they've been kicking inside there. It may just be take some adjustments from Crosby, but If there's anybody who can make adjustments, it's him. He knows the stadium, and he'll know it pretty well when he gets there on Sunday. So I don't think it'll be a big problem. I would be surprised, but, you know, there are days you just don't have it, and he hasn't had a whole bunch of those of late.
The one thing I wanted to point out, and I don't know if you noticed this, on field goals and extra points, Yash Nyman was one of the edge protectors. And when injuries happened, he kind of flipped on both sides. Minnesota almost got a PAT off him. And the reason I bring it up is that was his first NFL game. coming off his injuries to the elbow. I'm just putting it out there. You know, there's something, you know, Detroit a few years ago, I think with Patricia, did the fake field goal and the touchdown to kind of rub some salt in the wound. Different coordinator at that point. I just want to put that in the seed of Packers fans, plant that seed just in case there's a stress point put on Yash out there in Detroit. So we'll just.
Yeah, well, if he was, you know, a weakness, Detroit will see it on tape.
Yeah. So that was something I noticed. You know, Tom, I don't know. I'm curious to see how the Packers stack this a little bit. Rodgers and LaFleur were very, you know, not that they didn't soak in, I'm sure, whatever accolades they were given, but they were very much a, hey, it was week one. Hey, yeah, it was good, but one game. You know, they weren't really ready to wear a crown after week one. So I'm curious to see how they stack this. You know, because last year that was the thing, right? They had the 4 to 5 week, that period in the middle of the year where it got real hot, you know, and then it kind of went away. So, you know, that's probably the next step for this offense, right, is to stack games like this or like they saw in week one.
Yeah, that's the goal, you know, to keep the train rolling. And I think it'll be a challenge. I think, like I said, I think Detroit's not that much different than Minnesota from a secondary standpoint, and Packers have to show that they can take advantage of that again.
Sure. Well, of course, if they do or do not, Tom and I will be with you post-game, early morning, late night, whatever it may be, for the post-game Green 19 podcast. And we couldn't unveil it at the time last week this time, but Tom is also found future Hall of Famer, definitely a finalist this year, or nominee this year, Leroy Butler. So Tom and Leroy enjoyed interacting with you guys post-game. Of course, go find Olivia Reiner doing her post-game chat with Ryan Wood. Pete Doherty pre-game, we got you covered. Very unique 2020. All of the Packers news staff will be there at Lambeau Field. And make sure to download, subscribe to PackersNews.com, JSOnline.com. And for Tom, I'm Jim. We will see you next time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.